Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Paul Cech as my special expert guest. For over 25 years, Paul Cech's unique holistic health approach to treatment and education has transformed the lives of countless men and women through programs like the PPS Success Mastery Program. Paul is the founder of the Cech Institute based in San Diego, California. As a walking, talking definition of success, Paul is above all an educator, teaching and applying his methods to benefit others through lectures and multimedia. He is an internationally renowned expert at developing practical and effective methods for addressing all aspects of well-being, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. By treating the body as a whole system and finding the root cause of a problem, Paul has successfully coached clients toward complete resolution of their health and performance challenges, where traditional approaches have consistently failed. He has produced more than 50 videos, 6 books, and 16 advanced level home study courses, while regularly contributing to several industry publications and websites such as Mercola.com and Personal Training on the Net. Paul's mission is to provide scientific information on nutrition, movement, and holistic health from preconception care through geriatrics. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's really good to meet you, Paul, and I've looked forward to this interview. Let's begin with a little bit of insight about who you are for those that may not know you. Where are you from? Did you have a competitive sports background? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you developed such a strong interest as a leader in the health and fitness fields?
Originally, I was born in Los Angeles at an early age. My father died when I was quite young, but my mother met another man, and we moved to Idaho, where we had a pig farm for several years. Then we moved to Cottage Grove, Oregon, and my parents decided they wanted to immigrate to Canada and have a sheep farm specializing in the production of black sheep for black wool. My mother's a spinner, a weaver, and a sculptor. And so we bought up a bunch of rams that were known to give off a fairly high ratio of black sheep in their offspring, and my parents purchased a 140-acre farm on Vancouver Island, British Columbia, which we farmed and where I lived until I left there and joined the Army when I was 22. And in my life, I began wrestling competitively in the first grade, and you know, at that time I was in Idaho, and they have heavy, heavy sports programs for children as well. So I was involved in basketball, wrestling. I rode in the rodeo when I was young. I later, when I was in my early teens, became a competitive motocross racer and was in the Canadian rankings and sponsored by Honda. I began boxing at the age of 12, segued into kickboxing at 18, and I fought on the Army boxing team in the Army and became the trainer of the United States Army boxing team when I was 24. I worked with the team physician for 2 years where I learned how to take care of sports injuries. My job was to write all the nutrition programs and the exercise programs and perform the sports massage therapy duties to maintain the fighters. I represented the Army in triathlon as well, and I won the Army triathlon. And so my sporting background's quite diverse, but most of my effort went to boxing and motocross racing when I was young. And once I got on the Army boxing team and became the trainer, I had sort of free rein to express my ideas about nutrition, conditioning, and all the factors that were related to performance, which I earned that right due to the fact that I was able to fight hard all the way through my boxing matches, and they had a lot of problems with fighters burning out in the third round, and they were always blown away that I could train as many as 4 hours a day for triathlon and do all the training with the boxing team and still perform very well. So that gave me sort of the catapult. That was January 1984. I became the trainer of the Army boxing team, and I left the Army in late 86, and that sort of became the foundation for my professional career. And I just got really excited with this experience of being able to help people achieve their dreams and set performance goals and reduce injury. And I found it such a valuable use of my time to be able to do something that I enjoyed doing and people enjoyed receiving. And that triggered off my now 25-year career, and I've literally never stopped studying and practicing since the first day on the job as the trainer of the United States Army boxing team, and here I am.
Well, that's really an incredible background. Fantastic sports history, and some of the sports you mentioned, boxing, triathlons, wrestling. I wrestled myself. I mean, these sports are tough. And, what came to mind is I had no idea that you had such Canadian influence. Obviously, living there has given you that softer, more gentle Canadian feel. And also the influence that both countries have, I think it maybe makes you more well-rounded and with that excellent background in sports. But, with the military, what can you say, you're an entrepreneur and you're very successful, and that's kind of like the opposite of being in the military where you have to take orders and become almost one with the Borg. What was that experience like compared to being an individual who's in charge of their life completely?
It was interesting. I did a bit of a sort of an analysis of all the fighters when I was in the Army boxing team, and I've been doing this analysis ever since, and I found some interesting parallels. You'll find that amongst boxers and kickboxers, there's a very, very high correlation between unsettled issues with the father and the athlete. So what happens is people that have challenging relationships, particularly with their fathers, find that they can safely vent that anger in sports like boxing and martial arts and other combat sports like football and hockey. In the Army, I saw also that there were many young men in there that had the same experience as I did, and one of the most common experiences I found to be related to joining the military was being raised in a family where you were never really acknowledged effectively for your accomplishments in school or as a person. So as a young man, my father died when I was 8, so I was raised by my stepfather, and I found myself never getting told good job, no matter how good I did. In the point of my early 20s, I saw the Army as an opportunity for me to really enter into a system that was well structured and had a reward system in place for accomplishers. And I knew that I was capable of accomplishing anything I set my mind to. And I literally won every single peacetime award a soldier can win while I was in the Army, including being voted the most outstanding soldier in the 82nd Airborne Division, of which they only pick 6 per year out of 16,000 soldiers. So what the Army did for me was give me a structure and a reward system so that I could really heal my ego, my need for approval. And I carried all my creativity into the military and brought that right to the Army boxing team, which almost functions like a special unit within the military. I only had to wear my Army uniform once every 90 days to do my mandatory jumps out of the airplane and do, practice war maneuvers with my unit. But the rest of the time, I almost existed like a Delta Force soldier, a plainclothes soldier in a special unit. And my whole function was to take care of the Army fighters and the Army athletes and help them win contests. So, interestingly enough, inside of what you would consider a very structured, very closed system, I managed to find a spot where I could be highly creative and earn a lot of respect, while at the same time succumbing to the rigors and the structure of being a soldier as well. So I had the best of both worlds there.
Well, you're so right about the damaged goods. I mean, as a naturopath myself and as a man, I mean, that's experienced very much of what you have related to about the father and son relationship. I can attest to the significance of that. It is so well said, Paul. I really appreciate that, because that's an area that you can't really take vitamins to treat. So I'm going to ask you, when you're working with your people one-on-one and you get personal with them, and you find out that this guy doesn't have a good relationship with his father, which I find much more common than not. What is your advice? How do you help this guy overcome this area so that he and even she can move forward in life and find approval in themselves and begin to conquer other areas that are important for their own inner development and such?
Well, my philosophy is one that I can quote Napoleon Hill for: behind every cloud of gray is a silver lining. My philosophy is that everybody is loving to the very best of their ability. All of our parents, no matter how disgruntled, how disrupted, whether they're alcoholics, drug abusers, violent, essentially our parents were once children who were usually raised in environments equal to or worse than the one they've created for us, because that's where they learned how to do it. And because we have no systems of effective parenting in North America that are accessible to the community at large, it's pretty safe to say that our parents' parenting models are nothing but the very model that their parents inflicted upon them. So what I teach my patients is that your mother and father were doing their level best to love you. That's the only thing they know how to do, and why would they do anything else? And when we look at the beauty and the benefits that come from what we would consider to be challenging upbringings, which I highlight for my patients, I take them through a process where I show them how they would not be the person that they are today. As a matter of fact, I have a special workshop where I teach these techniques so that everybody can free themselves from the pain and the obstructions and what I call the impossibility walls created by their childhood upbringing. And that is my How to Find and Live Your Legacy workshop, which is coming up shortly here in Vista, California, which is labeled right on my PPSSuccessMastery.com website, which is PPSSuccess.com. But essentially, once an individual gets clear and understands, wow, you know, my mom and dad were just doing the best they could, when people look at the legitimate financial pressures, they look at the religious pressures, the social pressures of being a parent, and look at the, you know, the challenges that each parent brings into being a parent, and when one acknowledges how challenging it is to make it in the world as an adult, they can see how quickly the pressures of managing finances and managing multiple people and feeding and nurturing can become very, very challenging in today's world. What I show my patients and my students is how very, very clearly, for example, in myself, I did not get along well with my stepfather. I had a very, very poor relationship with no level of, you know, shall we call, familial intimacy where I was stroked or rewarded or aggrandized to bolster my ego in a healthy way. So what I did was I found my solace in competitive sports. And what that did was teach me to become completely and utterly reliant upon myself to learn how to reach into the depths of my potential and pull it out to, you know, go the extra mile. Also, you'll find many of the fathers that we still have challenges with actually gave us the discipline to complete tasks on time, albeit the reward structure may not be ideal. But if you look at lots of the people that today are millionaires and very successful in their working environment, you'll see they have a very strong work ethic that usually came by way of a parent who maybe been less effective as a lover, but was very, very effective at creating structure and teaching us the importance of, you know, virtue, of getting the job done, of being on time, of being honest. So essentially, I show people through a series of processes that the very life they've lived, as painful and ugly as it may look when you look at it frame by frame, when you look at the whole movie, it really is essentially, in almost every case, a road to freedom.
So what is the difference between the son who grows up and does the work and realizes the damage that's been done and overcomes it and moves forward, and his father, who does no work at all, who's actually mean and abusive, and by choice continues to behave that way and has no desire to take any workshop, to read any book, or make any changes, even when the family, the mother, the other siblings, the children, are encouraging him to think about changing, what is it about that individual? What's the difference between, say, yourself or myself going through these experiences? Is there something in us? Is it an experience of life, or is it just because our genetics might be different? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, think of our upbringing as pressure. So to the degree that my father abused me and criticized me and didn't give me the support I needed, it created internal pressure. And so for me, that pressure was to prove to my father initially that I was more than what he had labeled me as. So I learned very early on, when somebody says that I can't do something, that's a perfect opportunity to prove that I can do it, both for their awareness and for my own sense of self. So the ego kicks in. And anybody that has an ego, when someone says that you can't do something, the ego normally reacts immediately and says, oh, you want to bet? So what you'll find is that each of us has these pressure-building mechanisms. I ask people all the time, what inflates your bodysuit? What gets you out of bed every morning? And you can see this, for example, when people do things like public speaking. They'll go through this ritual. And some of them, you know, they have to be alone. You see baseball players, before they go up to bat, they have their ritual of tapping their right foot 3 times, wearing purple socks and ladies' underwear, or whatever their little, you know, ritual is. These are all the ways that we pressurize ourselves to move to the next level of our being, our, you know, growth and development. Now, the reality of it is that the longer somebody runs any software program in the nervous system, the more established it gets and the harder it is to change the flow of energy through that system, which is exactly where the old saying, you can't teach an old dog a new trick, comes from. So when we're talking about our fathers, we're usually talking about people who were trapped in or submitted to rigid systems and or succumbed to their own impossibility walls, such as, oh, I'll never amount to being anything but a mechanic. So when the universe starts to change, or when the world starts to put more financial pressure on them than they can deal with as a mechanic, people like you and I have a choice: upskill or stay at the level that we are at financially, but start hating life and criticizing and being grumpy all the time, because as our bills are rising, our income isn't. The only defense mechanism we have is to degrade everything around us. Now, it's sad that that happens, but the reality of it is every single change in the environment is an opportunity to upgrade our internal software so that we more effectively interface with the environment. Perception is clearly a combination of external environment, internal environment, and prior programming. So when I look at people like you're describing, I look at what's outside of them that's influencing them, what's inside of them, such as their own childhood upbringing, their own religious and philosophical beliefs, what's influencing them on the inside, and what are their prior belief systems that they were imprinted with. And then I look to see where I can access that individual. So if you get somebody like you're describing who's very, very dogmatic, but they're drinking 10 cups of coffee a day, their trace minerals are depleted, their enzyme depleted, to the degree that we are encouraging somebody like that to make a change, even if it's just to do their stretching and their exercises on a regularly scheduled plan so that they can change their body shape or get out of pain, to the degree that those people are entrapped within their own psyche or in their own physiology, sometimes we have to choose which door we can enter in and implement change at a level that is the least threatening and the most likely to take place for them. It's very important to remember that to the degree that someone needs to change, it's almost always a big change, and the bigger the change, the more energy it takes. Measure how long it takes someone to sprint 40 meters, and then you throw in a cone every 10 meters and make them change directions. The amount of energy it takes to run that 40 meters goes up very high, and the speed that they can do it goes down proportionate to the degree and the number of turns. So philosophically speaking, I look at a person physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, and I say, where can I enter into this individual's physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual reality and create enough energy and enough motive to encourage them to achieve their dreams? And so far, I've been pretty successful with that model.
No doubt, and I can see why. It reminds me of a minister that said to the congregation, okay, enough of the baby food. It's time to start chewing on some meat.
Yeah.
And my goodness, that's some good solid meat to chew on there, Paul. I know that our listeners and students are going to greatly benefit from some of that stuff. It's very powerful, very, very powerful. Now, the Czech Institute is world-renowned. It attracts students from all over the globe. Can you tell us, in a nutshell, what the Institute does and how you came up with the concept of even creating the Institute?
Sure. First and foremost, when I got out of the Army, I went to the Sports Massage Therapy Institute in Encinitas, California, so I could have a license to practice in the state of California, although a lot of what I was doing was exercise-based, working on posture, improving strength, using calisthenics, weightlifting, stretching to improve performance like I did with the fighters, and I was also using massage therapy. So I got my license to practice sports massage, but the entire time I was mixing stretching, exercise, postural awareness, and massage therapy or soft tissue therapy together. And right away, early in my career, everyone that I had ever worked with or worked for said, wow, you know, a lot of the things that you're doing are very, very unique, unusual approaches, and they work. You ought to, you know, write articles or teach classes on this. Now, the reason that was is because before I even got my massage license, I spent 2 years just practicing on my own, using my intuition, going by feel, and reading books and then just testing it. So I developed all sorts of methods without anybody ever teaching me that turned out to be highly effective, which is why I kept doing them. And I became the first clinical massage therapist to ever work in a physical therapy clinic full-time in the city of San Diego. I worked in the largest physical therapy clinic for 4 years with 22 physical therapists and athletic trainers, and we are also attached at that time to a surgical center with 13 surgeons. And then I had more of the same. They said, wow, you know, this is really an unusual approach. We never learned this in physical therapy school. We never learned this in medical school. You ought to start teaching. So I started doing consultations for physical therapy clinics all over the United States, teaching the principles of soft tissue therapy, neuromuscular therapy, and how to integrate that with corrective and performance exercise. And I had such a really just a massive positive response to my teachings and to the effects of them that I continued to move forward. And then it got to the point where I realized I'd lectured in medical schools, chiropractic schools, physical therapy environments, massage therapy, sports conditioning, and I saw that some of the principles that I were teaching were not only extremely basic, but radically overlooked in all the healthcare professions. And I began working with the famous strength coach Charles Pollock in 95, and he had done some consulting with me, and I helped him rehabilitate an athlete that was medically retired. And we were very successful at that. And you may know who that was. The athlete's name is Gary Roberts, the famous hockey player.
Yes.
Yeah, so I designed all the rehabilitation programs, the joint mobilization stretchings, exercises, and soft tissue work to guide Charles to return Gary. And then I went to the physician's reevaluation where he was going to either get the green light to play again or not. Because after they medically retire an athlete like that, it's very, very risky to let them back on the ice, because if they get hit again, they often try to sue the team. And so it's rare that someone can get back in once they've medically been retired, but we successfully did that. And it was Charles Pollock who said one day, he said, you know, Paul, if you did not study another thing and say another word for 5 years, you'd still be miles ahead of the industry. You really ought to start teaching people this stuff. In fact, I'd like to send two of my trainers to do an internship with you. And so Charles actually sent me my first two ever interns, which I was very, very successful at teaching, and they were highly skilled strength and conditioning coaches and found it so valuable that I thought, well, this is really quite enjoyable. It's private. I can answer questions. There's no rush. There's no, you know, I don't have to jam-pack things in a schedule. And so I set up these internship opportunities. And from there, the program just continued to grow. And shortly after I did that, I started getting requests to go to Australia and New Zealand and teach over there. And I had such a massive response to my workshops in New Zealand and Australia. I literally did about 120 seminars and workshops in Australia and New Zealand in the course of about the next 3 or 4 years. There was times I was on the road for 4 months straight doing as many as 3 or 4 seminars and workshops a week at different locations. And that basically developed the foundation, and I drew all my chief instructors, which now travel around the world teaching from me, out of the Australia-New Zealand crowd, imported them to the United States, and then they helped me build the system. Now I have some 20 instructors teaching for me all over the world.
Well, that's got to be gratifying to see your work worked through other people and then them teaching it to other students and seeing the good news that you have and your concepts taught around the world. Now, what kind of people come to your institute? Like, what walk of life? Are these people already professionals? Who are the kinds of people that come to the institute looking for some of the courses that you have to offer?
Well, because we teach 3 major certifications, we have a course in golf biomechanics, which is how to condition golfers to improve performance and help rehabilitate them from golf injuries. So we get a lot of teaching pros from the golf industry, and then we get a lot of exercise professionals and medical professionals that are interested in my approach to golf conditioning. And I wrote a book called The Golf Biomechanics Manual, which is, to my last record check, the most comprehensive book in the world on golf conditioning. And that's the manual for the course. So we get everything from medical doctors to chiropractors to osteopaths to podiatrists to nurses, anybody that's interested in golf who wants to learn how to use the techniques that I teach for golfers coming through that program. We have a holistic lifestyle coaching program, which is a 3-level program, typically takes a year and a half to complete. Holistic lifestyle coaching level 1, the manual, is my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. And the purpose of that course is to teach everyone how to live the very, very simple principles, which I talk about in that program, which are really the foundation of all my teachings. And again, we have every branch of medicine and healthcare, from nutritionists to dietitians, you name it, they're in there. It's a multidisciplinary program. But the unique thing about HLC1 is it's also open to the public. So we get truck drivers, carpenters, accountants, housewives, teenagers coming through that program. And interestingly enough, many of them actually switch from their existing profession to become an HLC2, which is a holistic lifestyle coach that's trained to help other people overcome health and lifestyle challenges. And then HLC3 goes into complex cases. So we do, all of our programs are multidisciplinary, and what we ask people to do is operate within the scope of their licensure, yet we want each of them to learn at every step of the way what the other professionals are due and are licensed to do, so that they know when and who to refer to. The CHECK program is a corrective exercise program. It begins with our exercise coach program, and then it moves to CHECK level 1, then to CHECK 2, then to CHECK 3, then to CHECK 4. That typically takes 4 years to complete. These blocks of education range from 5 days to 12 days, depending on which level. And once you pass level 2, you have to turn in case histories to demonstrate that you're effectively applying all the teachings, so that we don't just get you further lost. And there are a number of people out there that have actually completed all of those certifications. I think almost every one of my instructors is a CHECK level 4, an HLC3, and a golf biomechanic. So they have a very comprehensive understanding of how the body works. And we have everybody, one of our practitioners is Jay Smith, who's a physiatrist at the Mayo Clinic as an MD. And then we've got a professor of podiatry from Montreal, Canada. I mean, we have over 8,000 students in our programs right now, and they literally cover every span of the globe and every profession you can think of.
Fantastic. Now, I know that some of these courses are distance learning, and some of them you have to attend the institute in person. Is that correct?
Yeah. The prerequisites are all correspondence courses. So for each of the major courses, there's a prerequisite, or one or more prerequisites. We have prerequisite reading and prerequisite courses to prepare people for the courses. how to eat, move, and be healthy is the only prerequisite for Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 1. So the courses are all a combination of correspondence courses that you have to pass tests on to meet the requirements to get into the actual physical training. And then we encourage people to take at least 6 months between practical workshops to apply and master the techniques that they've learned before they jump into the next class. And in some of them, as I've said, I've got case history systems set up so that nobody can move forward without demonstrating objectively that they're ready to move forward. So it's a mix of correspondence and practical workshop.
Now, you mentioned your book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. Tell us a bit about that, please, Paul.
Well, the book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, really came about because at the time I wrote the book, which I believe was, 2002 or something like that. I'm just kind of checking the copyright date on here. 2004. It took me 3 years to write it, so I began around 2001, and the reason it took 3 years to write it is not because it took me that long to write it. It took me that long to keep refining it and simplifying it. You know, when you work in the field, you can kind of lose touch with what the public is able to, process and understand. And having spent my entire career working with physical therapists, medical professionals, surgeons, my whole linguistic structure had gotten very complex without me realizing it until I started having reviewers read my book and underlining about every third word going, what is that? So I took 3 years to restructure the book till I got it down to the very essence of my teachings. And the way I built the book was, and the reason I put the book together was, I found myself sitting in my treatment room saying the same things over and over and over again like a broken record. And I just felt like every day was Groundhog Day. And it really made me sad to see a lot of these people coming to me that were obese, that had cancer, that had, 15, 20 years of chronic low back pain, yet not one single doctor had ever asked them how much water they were drinking a day. What kind of food were they eating? Very few people ever look at the medical drugs or the recreational drugs that they were using or things that would directly affect their physiology. Very few people had any knowledge of stress nor how to manage it, yet it's very safe to say that every disease is directly related to the amount of stress an individual has in their life. So I went through my drawer where I keep all my patient handouts and essentially wrote a book that strings all my patient handouts together as one document. And then I put together a questionnaire system in the front of the book so that you could take questionnaires and it would identify by a weighted system of scoring where the highest levels of stress in your life were, and therefore what were the things that you needed to do immediately on your road to achieving health and well-being. And I wrote the system so that when you score your graph out, the most important high scores you have are furthest to the left on the graph. So for example, if you scored high on every single category, I would teach you in the book that the most important thing you can do is start with column number one to the left, which is you are what you eat. Because there's no sense seeing a guy like me or getting a bunch of fancy sports nutrition or nutritional supplementation if you're using your mouth as a garbage pail. So I basically structured the entire book so that an individual could have a private consultation with me without me being there and then be directed to my own explanations for my own patient handouts without me being there. And when anyone calls me to see me as a patient, I always tell them, if you have not followed the principles in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, for at least 6 months religiously, you're going to pay me $500 an hour, and I'm going to sit at my table in my library and read that book to you. And there's really nothing I'm going to be able to do for you or anybody else can do for you until you get the foundation principles right, which is sleeping, eating, breathing, hydration, thinking, and movement.
Well, it sounds like a mandatory read. Sounds like it's something that should be in every university bookstore, and every high school should bring that book in to teach the kids. As you well know, our students in the school program are not getting this high-quality information. Thanks so much, Paul. Now, please bring us to your website address and maybe give us a telephone number that the students can call to get more information or log on to so they can order your book.
Sure. A quick announcement. I have a teleseminar series coming up on the book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, and how to use it. And you can learn about that at www.chekinstitute.com. That's chekinstitute.com. The teleseminar starts August the 25th and runs for 6 weeks. And the book is part of the program. And the phone number for the Institute is 800-552-8789. And that will work anywhere in Canada or the United States. Or you can call 760-477-2620. And for people that are interested in my personal, professional, spiritual development program, you can go to P, as in Paul, PSSuccess.com. That's PPSSuccess.com. And you can learn more about my upcoming workshops that fall into that category, such as the things we began talking about on that website.
Absolutely wonderful. Paul, our time is gone, but what an informative interview, and your information, you know, is more dense than lead. I don't think Superman could even look through it. You know, your knowledge is incredible. And for everyone out there listening, let's tap into Paul's mind. Let's get into his institute. Let's enroll in some of his classes. Let's get some of his books and spread the word. Paul, thanks very much for being my special expert guest. And I'd like to ask you if you could just leave with us a special parting word of advice or inspiration to lend our thoughts towards for the rest of the day.
Sure. There's nobody here but you.
Very, very good. Paul Cech is an inspiration to many, many thousands of people. He is CEO and president of the Paul Cech Institute and the founder. And Paul, we thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.